Welcome back at Radio Swammerdam. We're talking about different research into the Cold War today. Now we're joined by Joep Sonnemans. He wrote a guest. He's a behavioral economist, and he is a guest columnist for us today. And he wrote a column where he analyzes the Cold War, I think. No, he doesn't? Well, let's hear from him. Here you go, Joep.
Let's see. In 1944, near the end of the Second World War, a book was published that would have an enormous influence on the social sciences. The book was called A Theory of Games and Economic Behavior, and the writers were a mathematical genius, John von Neumann, and an economist, Oscar Morgenstern. John von Neumann had already published the first paper ever on game theory in the 20s, but this book would establish game theory as a new field in academics, and it would also attract the attention of military strategists during the Cold War. So, what is a game, according to game theory? In a game, there are multiple agents who all make decisions, and the outcome of the game depends on the combination of all these decisions, and in some games, also luck. Game theory developed a new language to describe strategical interaction. To define a game, we have to describe who the players are and which possible decisions they can make in the different stages of the game. We also have to describe the rules of the game, for example, whether the players make the moves simultaneously or sequentially, and we have to describe how exactly the possible outcomes depend on the actions of the players. Finally, we have to describe the attractiveness of each possible outcome for each player. So in a game, the outcome does not depend only on my actions, but also on the actions of others. What is the best action for me typically depends on what the others will do. This means that I have to form beliefs about the decisions of the other players. I have to put myself in the shoes of these other players and try to reason like they do. I have to try to outsmart them. However, things get complicated here. Their decisions will depend on their belief about what I will do. This means that I have to form beliefs about their beliefs about my actions in order to choose my best action. And they have to form beliefs about my beliefs, about their beliefs, about my actions, etc. Now, this may sound like an endless series of beliefs about beliefs about beliefs, but maybe surprisingly, in each game, there are solutions where all players form beliefs that are correct and all players make their decisions according to these beliefs. Military strategists in the Cold War realized that they were not in a situation where they could use trial and error to find solutions. Any mistake could have terrible consequences. They hired von Neumann and other mathematicians to develop game theoretic models. The military wanted to understand the strategic properties of the situation, but they also wanted advice about what to do. Making models turned out not to be a difficult problem, but giving useful advice, that was much harder. The mathematical models had to make some essential assumptions about the rationality of the players, and these assumptions were not always met in reality. I will illustrate this problem with an example. This example is from Daniel Ellsberg, an economist and a game theorist who worked for the US military. And it is from an article from 1959 with the nice title, The Theory and Practice of Blackmail. It relates to a series of attempts to rob banks with a threat in the early 50s. For example, a bank robber handed this note to a bank teller. Have a grenade in my hand and two more. I will use them. Didn't come here to get caught. Take a look. Toss in your and your neighbor's money. Put $5,000 in bundled 20s and 10s in coin bag. Count it. Don't stuff it. Keep quiet until I'm out of the door or this place will look like a battlefield. Now, let's analyze this game. If the bank teller doesn't give any money, what will a rational bank robber do? Using the grenade will be costly. He may hurt himself or even die, and it will be without any benefits because he still doesn't have the money. It would then be better just to walk away. So a rational robber will not use the hand grenade. The threat is not credible in a game theoretical sense, and the bank teller should not give the money. However, the bank teller may not want to rely on the rationality of the robber. Even if the subjective probability of the robber using the grenade is quite small, the effects of such use are so disastrous that this negative expected value outweighs the relatively small cost of paying $5,000. If the robber looks very disturbed, emotional, and not very rational, the teller better gives in. This means that it is in the interest of the bank robber to look irrational. Now, the same reasoning is applicable in international relations. Ellsberg describes in his paper the strategic strengths of being or looking like a crazy dictator. If a dictator does weird things once in a while, the opponent will not be sure about the rationality of this dictator. In some cases, this may be adventures for the dictator, especially in games where threats and ultimatums will not be credible otherwise. Dictatorships have an advantage over democracies in this respect. In general, it's much easier for a dictator to pretend to be crazy compared with a democratically chosen leader. In a democracy, voters will probably not vote for a politician who acts crazy before an election. Crazy actions only after the election will not be believable to the enemy if the leader always acted reasonable before he or she was elected. However, I may be wrong here. The surprising success of Donald Trump in the pre-election so far shows that irrationality and craziness can go a long way, also in a democracy. We will see.